This is Ryan O'Hara, and you're listening to Take Me Off Your List. If you've never heard this phrase before, this podcast probably isn't for you. But don't leave. I need you. I'm terribly lonely. Please. I'm making this podcast primarily to promote my company, Pitchfire.
Pitchfire? That sounds stupid.
You know what, listener? It kind of isn't. In fact, every day someone tells me I wish I had thought of this idea first. Pitchfire is the one place on the internet where people like getting pitched. That's because there's no cold calls, cold emails, or LinkedIn messages. Businesses pay prospects money to respond to their prospecting with Pitchfire. If you're feeling frisky and you want to be an early adopter, go create an account at pitchfire.com. Let's jump into the show. What's up, everybody? Ryan O'Hara here from Take Me Off Your List. Today is someone that I've been stalking and creeping on LinkedIn probably for a year. Like, I'm a creep. You should look behind you all the time. Dude, I'm creeping all the time. I'm ready to go. I've got Adam Robinson here from retention.com. What's up, Adam?
What's up, everybody? Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's funny. I joke with John Maza on our marketing team all the time. I'm like, see, Adam can do videos with a microphone and it's not distracting. Because like one of the things I've been doing is when I make videos, I've been actually struggling to not make the sound like dog shit. But like when I do podcasts, it's easier because you got the mic and the whole context of it. But you don't even notice it. Your stuff's really engaging and great. Adam,
Mic is also there, by the way. Like I've experimented, I don't like using the collar mics as I think the audio sounds like crap, but like one of these mics doesn't really matter what kind it is. So long as it's like the mic and it's kind of running through some sort of a preamp or something like that, the audio sounds incredible.
You know? I've always been like, when I do a lav, the thing I don't like, they call it a lav that's the industry term, guys. Now you're an insider. I hate it because if you do it before lunch and your stomach gargles, it literally picks that up. That's, I've had audio that I've edited and I hear, and I'm like, oh crap.
Was that me or was that the guy on the film?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, there was actually a monster that came in and attacked. If you're just listening to the audio, a monster came in and murdered me in the middle of the podcast. Adam, let's tell people at this point, if you're watching this and you don't know, or you're listening to this, you don't know who Adam Robinson is. Adam, tell people what you do for a living. What is it exactly you do here?
So I am a SaaS entrepreneur. My main company is called retention.com, and I'm starting a new business called RB2B, and they have the same core underlying idea. We will identify at the person level anonymous web traffic, and we will, if you're an e-commerce company, that's retention.com. We resolve it to a deliverable email address, and it helps with all sorts of abandonment use cases. If you're a B2B company, we take it to a LinkedIn profile in the business email, pop it into a Slack channel, and it's free. I mean, for now, I think it's, it will be free for the foreseeable future, but at some point we need to make money off of it. So we'll probably,
I will plug and say that we are using it at Pitchfire right now. And you ready for this? This will be a good post for you. We just got an investor meeting because of your product. So someone came to our site, there was an investor. I connected with them on LinkedIn and I wrote a cold email saying, hey, saw you, we're checking out Pitchfire. You want to talk? And we have a meeting with them next Wednesday. So party on.
I mean, what's interesting to me is it is shocking the number of people that would see that investor on their site and they don't know what to do after that.
Raising, by the way, like I'm not looking for funding or anything. I just want to talk to them.
Totally. But like, to me, if I knew somebody who's on my site, it would, and there was like a connect on LinkedIn button next to the contact.
Yeah.
I would connect with that person on LinkedIn if they were in my ICP. Right. And then the next thing I would do is I would hit him with something very casual and try, like you said, I saw you were checking out Kickfire. That's not necessarily, I saw that you were on my website. You know, you could have seen that they were checking you out on your LinkedIn profile. You could have seen whatever, but like, that seems like a really natural thing for me to do too. But it's just crazy. Like people are paralyzed when they're like, well, is it going to creep this person out? Like, should I wait a week to connect with them on LinkedIn? It's like, no, you shouldn't fucking wait a week.
Yeah.
Sales is sales. Do it now. Right. Like time and internet and everything. It's a very weird world. It's like in internet time, a week is literally an eternity. It's the Big Bang. Between the Big Bang and now is 7 days of internet time. Like, don't wait a week. Like, do it now. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So, so you launched this thing. A lot of people are using it and talk. I know you've been talking about a lot of people downloading it and stuff. You'll figure out how to monetize it later. Love that. One of the things that everyone, like, I feel like every week someone that has seen Pitchfire and what we're doing, like, will message me a post that you've done. Because a lot of the themes that we both talk about, like for me, for example, last March, I posted a video out that said that, like, hey, a bunch of shit's going to happen that's going to make cold prospecting not work anymore. Inbox providers are going to crack down on prospecting. The average team that we talk to, SalesLoft says that the average person has a 0.4% chance of getting a meeting when they do an activity in SalesLoft. AI writers are making it worse. Activities are going up, but response rates are going down. And
by the way,
literally a week later, I see you have the same type of post, but like with different data points. And I think that we're like, it, people have been, I think this thing has now been like killed because of how much we've talked about it.
And the interesting thing about that activity comment is the only way management typically responds to that is just by more activity.
Yeah.
So we all acknowledge that the reason this is happening is because more crappy activity is being done than ever before. Let's do more of that then.
Yeah. Like, we call it internally. And when I talk to investors and stuff, we've called it the outbound paradox. Basically, you do more activities. Because you do more activities, you get less responses. So you have to do more activities.
Yeah.
And it's just getting exponentially worse. I've kind of had to shift our perspective a little bit with Pitchfire because, like, we get into meetings with people and tell them this, and, you know, they're defensive because it's their jobs and how it works. Totally. I don't know if you know what we're doing, but like, we're building a place that's like a marketplace where you can buy responses off prospects. So, like, people join, the buyer directly gets paid. Right now it starts, you can get pitched and answer someone. You can say no, and I'm not interested. But the whole idea is that, like, I'm trying to create a road because the old roads don't work.
Yep.
Like calling that and emailing don't work as well as they used to.
Yep. Yeah.
So, like, one of the other themes that you kind of talk about, though, is like the need to like kind of work off of an inbound motion. What are some ways that you're seeing people do that?
So, like, my first business was pure outbound. And I didn't like the way that felt, period. And like, that's just my preference. Like, culturally, I didn't like running a boiler room to grow a business.
Yeah.
It's just so high turnover. And like, you know, you're trying to sell these people the dream and you're like shoving half of them out the door 3 weeks. You know what I mean? It's just, there's just a lot culturally I didn't like. The other problem is when I started my first startup, I did not appreciate how powerful a great product is versus a great sales motion. I truly believe a great product will absolutely kill a great sales motion 10 days out of 10. A great sales motion and a great product are absolutely deadly. But yeah, like, if you have to pick one, you pick the product. And my second business was very much, so like, we got it to 12 million ARR with six people. And the reason it was able to get there is because it had an inherent word of mouth that was helping the spread. And then we did cold email with a team in the Philippines on top of that. And those two things were enough to just like get it up there. But I would consider that mostly an inbound motion. It wasn't, you know what I mean? Cause we didn't have teams of SDO. We didn't have a sophisticated handoff. It's like one salesperson doing 15-minute demos and, you know, people were self-signing up and stuff like that. So that just the way that company felt until then, and it's the company, it's retention.com now. I just like that a lot better. Like with retention.com, 70% of our demos are inbound. And like it's not quite 70% because we have like a partner motion that, you know, sort of unattributed, and it's just we're out creating activity in the physical world that just leads people to like hear it six times and show up and book a demo or whatever.
Yeah.
But still, it's not, you know, our AEs have an outbound quota. I think it's like 15 or 20% of their OTE, but it is certainly not this like pure outbound motion. Now, I have been profoundly affected. The first space I was in was the email newsletter. It's now called marketing automation space.
Yeah.
MailChimp was intoxicating to watch. Just the 1 minute summary of their story was Constant Contact was the pioneer. They invented this.
Yeah.
It went public at 100 million ARR in 2009. MailChimp had 2 million ARR at that point. They decided to create this self-serve free offering for what was 80% of Constant Contact's users. Constant Contact kept growing, but MailChimp went from 2 million ARR in 2009 to 100 million 4 years later with one engineer.
Wow. I didn't know that it was that short staff.
One engineer.
That's crazy.
The power of free, right? Like it, yeah. And by the way, the whole time it was happening, Constant Contact didn't even know. They were in total denial of it. They were like, MailChimp's this like cute little free tool that like some people use. And then Constant Contact gets bought for $1 billion after they went public, actually, by Endurance. 4 years later, MailChimp bootstrapped, never took a dollar from anybody, into a Bitzer for 12.5B. $1 billion ARR with 1,000 employees. Incredible. There's some underlying fundamental characteristics of email newsletter as a business that makes it a really compelling bootstrap business to be in. The value metric is excellent. It's like as the list grows, you get paid more. So there, you can have a 50% gross churn, which I'm sure they had. And then the customers that stick around are accreting by 100%. So it's like you can have a small business platform that's actually net revenue retention positive. And that's kind of, you know, with their top of funnel, it's all they needed. So anyway, this power of free thing is something I'm obsessed with this LinkedIn thing I've been doing. I've just been become obsessed with the value of attention, right? Like, and you know, basically the game that I'm like, oh yeah, I got this great new product. Everybody's making money on it. Like I'm not charging for it and I'm going to figure it out later. Like I'm trying to make content that is viral and have a product that just by stating what it does is viral. Like you just saying what it does and then saying that it's free, people will hear that and they'll just go to rb2b.com and sign up. Right. So like, I'm really reluctant to pull back on what the core offer is, which is like website visitors to LinkedIn profiles, push to Slack for free. Those four statements.
Yeah.
My challenge for myself is how do I add, rather than pull back on that offer, how do I add things that people will pay for? And like, you know, first it'll be 1%, then it'll be 2%. Maybe you can get to like 5 or something. Because when you ratchet back, at some point that virality is going to just end, you know? So yeah, that is my journey with that type of stuff. But like, I think there's just like, you know, you can structure an offer in a way, like this is crazy what I'm doing. I mean, I'm funding it with my other business, right? Like it would be very difficult to just like bootstrap from day one and be like, I have no plan for monetization. Like I'm fine if it takes a year, like whatever. But like, you know, this is the approach that I want to take just because like I saw what happened. Like MailChimp like was able to have that discipline, you know, like it didn't, because like these free things are like exponential, right? It's like the sort of network effect, or what do we call it, of when 100 people are using it and they're talking to their friends, it grows at a certain rate. When 10,000 people are using it and talking to your friends, they're just talking to way more friends, you know?
It turns into the person you're talking to already knows about it.
Yeah.
I've been kind of, one of the things I've been trying to do with Pitchfire is like, we've had people be like, hey, why don't you move to, so we have like, right now we have a couple thousand people in our marketplace. And like, I've been like having people be like, oh, you should charge a platform fee for sellers to go send pitches in. And I kind of been like really hugging and thinking about usage pricing more. Like, cause I feel like SaaS is sort of like companies don't want to spend money right now. All of them are trying to extend runway. And if you do SaaS, you're basically guaranteed to spend money, even if it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean,
like is SaaS what you'd probably do with an event? I know you have some tiers you're working on.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the EV of SaaS is so much greater. You know, but by the way, you don't have to be like selling 50K annual deals to people, right? Like there's less, you know, sort of like heavy SaaS models that you can do. But yeah, you know, the retention.com, like essentially it's a data company. Like we could just be charging per whatever.
Yeah, per record or something.
Yeah, like I contemplated metered, thought that the valuation would be way better if it was SaaS. Problem is, you know, 2 years in, It's like a no, like if you, that investor you're talking to, if you're like, what's the lowest churn MarTech SaaS category? They'd be like CRM or like Klaviyo or like, you know, for e-commerce companies, email marketing, because it is their CRM. It's like a system of record is what they call it. If you're like, what's the highest? Then they would say selling leads literally is like the highest category. If you're trying to make a product where you're selling leads or intent data, a SaaS, there are so many reasons someone would cancel it and just stop using the category altogether, right? Whereas like a CRM, you can't, right? Your business goes under, you shut it off. Or it's like, I literally can't, I grew out of Zoho CRM. I need to move to Salesforce. Like that's kind of, it's it, right? So I didn't know that when I started the company, that no matter, almost no matter what I did, unless I like built some other mission critical workflow on top, it was going to be this absurdly high churn situation because somebody new can show up at the company and be like, I don't like these leads. You know, I don't know what this is. You know, I don't like the only thing that happens when I turn it off is you say that I'm making less money in Klaviyo. Okay. Off, you know? Yeah. I've been thinking, a really long-winded answer, like to say like what I thought I was getting when I made it SaaS, I don't have. So like maybe I should, what I'm trying to do with this next company though, by the way, since it's still selling leads and that's a super high churn category, I'm actually trying to give the leads away for free and sell workflows. So like sell repeat page, repeat website visitors, which is like very valuable for people with high ACV, right? Yep, sell a high functioning HubSpot integration that integrates with their tracking cookie, right? And like sort of does some shit like that. Or
think of, you know, another thing to think about is like, think of all these companies that dump money into lead scoring, but they don't have the individual data. They just have company data.
Yeah. Lead scoring, right? Like charge for that, you know, but like try to separate the revenue stream from people looking at it and being like, you know, my idea with this big free offer is like, by the time that you pay, you know that you're going to pay forever, you know? And if you're not going to pay forever, then just use it for free.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't fuck
my churn picture up, right? Like, you know, I don't have a great, you know, I don't have a great answer.
Stemming off of the CRM talk that you were thinking about, you know, it's one of the things I've been thinking about is like the concept of a CRM hasn't really changed in over 50 years. Like if you think about like all these companies use Salesforce, they start with either Zoho or one of the SMB companies, and then they move it into Salesforce. The objects, the accounts, the contacts, the leads, the opportunities, all those objects that live inside Salesforce, Salesforce had to make those because they were selling to legacy systems that were doing on-premise servers. Yeah. Go back to 1999, people were using Oracle CRM and like Sugar CRM and all these different apps. And they had to basically transpose those things over to Salesforce. And now that they have millions of customers, they can't switch it because people would be pissed off.
Right.
I feel like that concept of a CRM is like kind of like really dated and silly now. Like there's gotta be a better way to do it.
I mean, there has to be, and like how heavy it is. And like, you know, we have like a full, it's like, dude, I don't know. It's kind of crazy to me that like we have a full-time Salesforce engineer.
You guys do? Do you have one right now?
Yeah, it's an overseas person, but like we have a full-time Salesforce dev. You know, we got 60 people. I don't know. They're doing a lot of shit in Salesforce. They constantly need stuff changed, fields made, taken away, report this, you know, generate that, whatever.
Yeah, and you'd never leave them though, because it's your data architecture basically for internal data, right?
And when we started hiring people 18 months ago, we just made the decision to do Salesforce because when you hire quote unquote real people, they use Salesforce.
Yeah.
So that was the thought. It was like, if we're going to try to hire real people, then this is what we're going to have to use. And, you know, it's not bad. It's just like, you can't look at anything about Salesforce and be like, this is the best it could be. You know,
even when they redid like Lightning, like I don't know how long that was now, 6 or 7 years ago or something. Even when they redid Lightning, they couldn't, like, people didn't switch for a long time because like they'd have to teach everyone how to use it.
Yeah.
And like, you have all these silver haired people doing, not ageist, not trying to be ageist. I got a little gray, but like people like that have been doing sales for 15 years in Salesforce and you switch the UI on them, that's going to hurt their productivity.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird conundrum.
What
it's
are they
definitely huge, but it's like the problem I don't have with my business that I wish I did. Huge switching costs or like, you know, not using costs. It's like there's just not that for mine. People just turn off.
Do you feel so people are downloading this app and stuff and using it? The install is very easy. We just literally threw up headers in Webflow for it.
Yeah. And like 78% of people that have downloaded have put the script on. Isn't that crazy?
That's cool. Yeah. That's how wild. Do you track that? How do you track that? Is it just something in the back and it's like, hey, it's connected?
We just use Intercom, and if they have resolved more than, so it's like, you know, the amount of, we have a 7-day resolution rate.
Yeah.
That gets pushed to Intercom once a day. So you just say 7-day resolution greater than one, because they had to get the script on for, to get one contact.
Yeah.
And it's 78%.
That's awesome. That's really great.
I mean, I don't know if we could have gotten 78% if we were using people.
Yeah.
No. Operation. I, you know what I mean? It's like, we have like a sales led, do a demo, you know, customer success onboarding for like the other app. And we still get like 8% of people or something that just like disappear in the middle of all of that.
Do you,
know, just because of like, whatever, like people are switching jobs. They're like, whatever, you know what I mean?
Do you guys do anything with the 22% that don't come in? Like, do you do like emails or something to loop them back in?
So the app is now 1 month and 3 days old.
Yeah.
So like we will definitely get to that. There was a huge, this is worth saying, by the way, it was 35%, which I was really happy with. I thought, I was like, that's a normal, you know, I was talking to the people who did the Clearbit, you know, thing. They rolled it out like in, talking to the Warmly guy, he's like, well, Clearbit was like, when they rolled out, it was like 18% of people would actually get the script on. And then Warmly's like, it's going to be much higher than that just because people know how to put JavaScript on today. And like with the website builders, it's just super easy to do.
Yeah.
But like, it was 35%. I'm like, oh, that's a good percentage. And then we did this proactive support product that Intercom had. And in a week, it just like, boom. And it's like, my understanding is I didn't do it, but like, they get to a certain point, and if they stop, they just get attacked. It's like emails and like, you know, pop or whatever.
I do get the digest emails though. And they're like, they do make me go back in and check it. Like I'll forget to check the Slack channel and it reminds me to do it, which is really smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll change gears a little bit. One of the other things that I really kind of respect about what you've been talking about in the space and what's going on with marketing and sales is you talk about the plight of an SDR and the emotion of them doing sales pitches and feeling like shit when people don't get back to them. And I feel empathy for that too. Like I go through that a lot thinking about like when I started as a BDR originally, like that's what I did in 2008, 2009, I cold called and cold emailed businesses. I've been thinking about the evolution of how an SDR or BDR changes their and spends their day. And it fits with a lot of the themes that you talk about. What do you think that's going to look like in the next 5 to 10 years?
And that is the trillion-dollar question, isn't it? The trillion-dollar question that I have is, you know, will an AI be able to create, you know, my interpretation of sales is like, okay, there's like kind of like a needs assessment part of it. And then it's like, if this person fits in, then you are playing a game of trying to exploit that person's heuristics and get them to buy from you by doing that. Literally, it is emotional exploitation. And it is you trying to control this person through their primal instincts using emotion to get them to a close, right? If large language models, which we're over-investing in my opinion, are the medium-term future of AI, I don't think that they do that. You know, it's like guessing what word is next is not exploiting a person's heuristics. I think there are probability related models that can like look at ad response data and do that. But it's not clear to me that for like a low volume, high ACV, B2B SaaS, one-to-one sales cycle, that's the direction that this AI shit is going in. You know, again, for like mass market where you have millions in, like Facebook has hundreds of, they have a billion people on that platform, right? They can literally just like be like, okay, when people who sort of are like this are shown something sort of like this, then they go like this. But like when one buyer matters, you know, and like, you got to close that person. I'm not, you know, I don't know how you would do that. Right. Cause it's like the sort of numbers of data points around what those Google and Facebook are dealing with are what makes it so effective. So here's what I think happened, you know, reflecting on it over the last year. It's like before the automation tools, it's like, it's kind of like before the automation tools, maybe you needed like a 40 or 50K ACV to like make outbound work.
Yeah.
Then as the automation tools started rolling out, it made those reps so much more effective that it probably worked for 20K ACV for a while. Like North American reps, like maybe not in the expensive cities, but like you put them in Georgia or something and maybe it works.
Yep. Yep.
And then now response rates are one half, which I think we can all agree on. Like even the like haters that are just like run the outbound, the people who blast you when you post something like that, they're always the guys who run outbound agencies, right? And by the way, they're all killing it right now for the same reason, because outbound's not working for people. And these guys are saying they can still make it work. So they have a very profitable but high churn business. Yep. And they're sitting there saying that they're rocking it for people, right? Which is great advertising. So I think we can all agree on that response rates are half. Then if that's the case, if it used to work for 20 or 25, then it's probably not working up until 50. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you extrapolate the trend on that and it's getting worse. So if I'm ramping an outbound operation, I would probably take where I, you know, just back in the envelope math, where did I used to think the floor was for outbound working, you know, double it. And then I, if I were building a big operation, I'd probably double it again just to like give myself a few years of cushion, because at the end of the, you know, like you said, this is only getting worse, right? And like, you know, so what will their day look like? I think, man, it's just such a loaded question. Cause like one of the arguments I make is that even the highly, even the perfect email doesn't get seen now because of all of this stuff. Right. Yeah. So like, as that trend gets worse, does the research even matter? Right. Like is email simply a branding non-direct response channel in the future, or calling, whatever, you know what I mean? I just like, don't like, will there always be emotion for people who can take people to a Lakers game and close a deal? 100%. Right. Like that type of sales will always exist, but like, you know, will there always be a new channel? Perhaps, you know, but like, I don't know. I'm trying to make myself as good at organic social as humanly possible, because I feel like that's what's eating the world, you know.
Yeah.
That's where people's attention is going. So
the hard part about that with social though is it's like, I feel like today it's almost like you're yelling at a stadium. There's so many people doing it. And you brought it up earlier. You're talking about like, there's people that just post the minimum to stay in. Then there's that second wave, and then there's the influencers.
Known well versus well known. Like you can be well known by having a ghostwriter write content that placates LinkedIn's general audience, like AI, you know, work-life balance, going on holiday, you know,
selfie picture.
qualities of hiring people. You know, I have my family and balance my job this way. I'm not going to be on a panel without a woman, all this bullshit. And then like, you can join engagement circles, and like, you can grow your followers and the number of people commenting on your posts. That is a very broad and thin connection that you have to the world of social media, where you have to give your entire life is writing something that, you know, like, I have an audience of early stage founders. This post is written directly at them, and I will have 200 of them comment on it, because it's like the pain that I'm articulating from my personal journey, which no one else has experienced, is so acute and directly related to what they're experiencing that they will not be able to help themselves but to comment. And through that, they literally feel like they're friends with me because I'm sharing something that I don't share with other people. Right?
Yeah.
Like that level of playing the game, like I know, and this is why I use video too, because it's making people feel like they're friends with me. Like I could have way more followers pursuing another strategy, you know? But like, I know that like I have an audience of founders, I have an audience of high level salespeople, and I have an audience of high level marketers, and I know what to write for each of those three. And by basically like communicating the pain of my own journey to them, specifically as it relates to each category, I am creating a connection that is like that of a friend. And I think is the tremendous power of LinkedIn. Right.
Yeah. I feel like vulnerability and showing people stuff, it's just like how we make connections in real life.
Yeah.
Like it's like how you get to know people and do that.
Dude, I wrote a monthly update 2 days ago about how we were down 2.3% on the month.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. I saw that.
It sucked. Like, you know, it was terrible. It was like, and by the way, like an annoying thing about LinkedIn now is like, they're now kind of like stopping what would have been a huge post before, probably like halfway in, so that you'll buy the thought leadership ad. I mean, I'm totally convinced of this. Like that post would have had, it got like, it's weird. I put some of it in the comments and it got like 450 likes in the post and then another 100 in the comments. But that would have been like 2000 6 months ago, because it just would have ran for 24 hours. But they throttle it for me at like 40, 50K views and it stops, you know? And I got to go pay them to like let it go the rest of the way if I want to, which is like,
do you?
I haven't started that yet, but like, yeah, I definitely will, you know. This product, as soon as it gets to the point where we understand an economic model behind it, I'll start doing things to try to move it faster. But like right now, the position is just like, we're getting 80 or 90 people on average to sign up a day, just sort of not even talking specifically about the product in most cases, just commenting on my journey of building the business and like referencing it when appropriate. So until like right now, the problem's like getting the features that people will pay for and then the free to paid motion. And then once we kind of figure that out a little bit, then I think the problem becomes top of funnel again. So yeah, that's just the.
Well, I think we did it. I think we banged out a podcast. The critics said it couldn't be done, but we've successfully implemented this. Adam, it's always awesome hearing what you're doing. Everyone go follow Adam, and you can actually go get his product. It's free, right?
Totally free. Yeah. We don't even know. There's a $4.95 optional paid plan that we don't have the features for yet. It's like all of the features below it says coming soon. So yeah, it's free. It's totally free.
Cool. Adam, thank you so much for being on my end. I just want to let people know, I plugged this last week too, but on Pitchfire, we're building a new feature where you can actually make a pitch, create a link, and then send it to people. And they can get paid to answer your pitch if you send that link to them. If you want to beta test that, shoot me an email, ryan@pitchfire.com. We'll let you play around with it. We're being very careful about who uses it. We don't want to like flood the market with a bunch of this and have it be buggy. So if you want to try that, hit me up. Adam, thank you so much for being on. We appreciate you.